I feel very shaky tonight, and you'll have to understand, but this is the first time that I've talked publicly about this in almost 50 years. The year was 1969, and I was a pretty young sophomore at Archbishop Keough High School. An announcement came over the loudspeaker for me to go to Father Maskell's office. I had really never met him before. I had only seen him, passing him in the hallway. So I went to his office, and he politely let me in. He was the school chaplain and school counselor. He was only 30 at the time. That was only 5 years older than my oldest brother. He was a very stout man, about 6 feet tall. He was dressed in a black cassock and the priest's white collar. He had very short military-type hairstyle, but still with a lot of grease in it, and was reeking of aftershave. What was most notable then and afterwards to me was that his eyes were always very red and watery. He said to me that he had picked me out for a job, a very special job, and he had already vetted me with all of my teachers, and that my teachers had very highly recommended me. The job was that of confidential secretary. He was the school counselor, so he was counseling students. I would be taking dictation and typing up the notes for his files. The one overriding issue was that I had to keep absolute confidence of everything that went on in the office. I was a combination business and college student, so I knew how to take shorthand, and I was a very good typist. Well, I just jumped at the chance. I was already working two jobs. I wanted a car more than anything. I was one of eight children, and five of whom were boys. So I knew that there was no way that I was going to ever get any drive time in my father's car. So we began working together. Every session would begin with him giving me a cup of Coke in a paper cup, and he would dictate to me while I took dictation and then transcribed and typed. The stories were invariably about sex, always the students' sexual issues. They were about incest, about rape, about venereal disease, about sexual issues that the students were having with their boyfriends, even bestiality and group sex. And now, this did stun me, but I was a good Catholic girl, and I kept my word, and I never told anybody what happened in that office. When our work time was done, and we would work after school, and we would even work during school, he would call me away from class and make it up with my teachers that I was missing class. Afterwards, we would talk, and I liked it that he was very intelligent. He had a degree in psychology and also pharmacology, besides his religious training. And he hung on my every word. I didn't get so much talk time at home because, being one of eight children, and I was right in between two boys who ended up being lawyers, so it was very difficult to compete with those type of siblings. And we just talked about everything, and I just had I looked forward to those times in the early times of our relationship together. But as things progressed, it became more and more invasive. He would ask me about my relationship with my boyfriend, and insinuate that the reason why that I was going with an Irish red-haired boy was because I really wanted to have sex with my Irish red-haired father. He also would ask about my home life and tried to make a lot of insinuations that would seek to drive a wedge between my parents and I. He also would psychoanalyze me and give me all kinds of tests and even hypnotize me. That we played a game of cat and mouse where I said he couldn't hypnotize me, but in fact, I learned later that he did. We went on like this for about 2 years until the very last day of school when I got called to his office, and I got there and he was extremely distraught. He was even crying. And he went on and on about the loneliness of the priesthood and how he could never have someone like me because he was a priest. And then suddenly he came around the desk that had always separated us, and he grabbed me and he kissed me and he grabbed my breasts and he started pushing himself upon me. Well, having five brothers did come in handy then because I was a really good fighter and I was able to get away from him and ran out of the room. But the next couple of months were rather surreal. My boyfriend broke up with me, which was very difficult since we had been together for 3 years. I went to graduation parties where my KEO classmates were making out with their male teachers. I was asked out by one of my male teachers and went out with him, and he tried to have sex with me on the first date. And then I started to just become more confused about what had actually happened in that office. I couldn't remember large periods of time of what had gone on, but I did have some fragmented memories about driving in the car with him, only I was very docile and very quiet, and my hands were just in my lap, but I never knew where we were going. I also had memories of being at the gynecologist's office where oftentimes Father Maskell would say he had to take girls to the gynecologist without their parents' permission so because he was helping them. So I had memories of being there and being on the gynecologist table with men all around the table. Only I was looking down on myself as if I was on the ceiling. It turned my world upside down. Suddenly, I didn't know where I'd been or what had happened to me. So I started to act out, in response to that. I had terrible fights with my parents. I moved out of my house and started to do drugs. I married a boy who was in the midst of his own religious rebellion. I had a daughter and very quickly got a divorce. A little bit of time passed, and then I married again and got another divorce. A short time after, Jean Hargan Wiener and I then reconnected, and we admitted to one another what had happened, and we, for the first time, I felt like I wasn't crazy, that these memories that I were having that were just half-baked seemed to be making sense. So I started to restart my life again. I went back to school, or went to school. I got a bachelor's degree, and then I got a master's degree. I got a good job. I married a really good man, and I started to rise within the company that I was working for. It was a Fortune 150 company, and I then became one of the top 50 people in that company. And my life was going really, really well until the day that I got a call from the lawyers who were handling the Jane Roe, Jane Doe case against Father Maskell and the Catholic Church. And then when they told me that they wanted me to join that case, then all hell broke loose once again. And it was as if all of this ugliness came up that I had been pushing down all of this time inside of me, and I just went ballistic. I was just so anxiety-ridden and just had was just so unable to function. It put me directly into therapy with a psychiatrist, undoing all of the damage that had been done. Over the course of that time, then I was able to reconnect with or connect with the other Maskell survivors who had, and there were many of us by then. There were, you know, over 20. And then later on, Gemma and Abby, who were featured in the Keepers, and the work that they were doing to try to gain justice for Sister Kathy. After the Keepers came out, I was often asked, how could something like this happen? And I have a couple theories about that. First of all, when traumatic events happen, we're used to thinking about that in terms of fight or flight. Well, now psychologists know that there's a third reaction that can happen, and that is freeze. If a child, especially if a child is undergoing sexual abuse and cannot get out of it, then the brain will protect the body by forcing the brain to not create any more memories. And so that, along with the fact that Maskell was drugging and hypnotizing us, I think had a lot to do with the way that our memories ended up being so fragmented. The second thing I think that had a lot to do with it was blind faith. I know that it was definitely a factor in my family. My father would say to his children, if the priest and the nun said that you did it, then you did it. And there was this willingness to put them on a pedestal and believe anything that they did. And I know that that was really the case in my family. There was a dramatic collusion that went on between all the organizations that were supposed to protect us. Certainly the church did, by moving the priests from place to place so that it could ensure its own survival. The legal system allowed the church to deal internally with predatory priests rather than to prosecute them. And then Maskell, this is a man who had never had a date, yet he acted like an alpha male. He was the chaplain to so many police and military organizations. He had this very strong network of people on which to count on, so that he sex trafficked us to them so that they would be complicit in what was going on. And the last thing I'd like to mention is the rampant sexism that was going on in the church when I was growing up and that I still think believe exists today. When at my grade school, the priests live in this expansive, beautiful house. The priest had a cook, he had a housekeeper, he had an assistant, and the nuns that taught us lived in a cinder block building that lacked all warmth and welcoming. And when I got to high school, then there was Maskell, who was the chaplain and the counselor, but he was large and in charge. He was just sashaying all around the place and acting arrogant and with impunity. But the nuns were the ones that were actually the leadership in the school, but they were kowtowing to him. So the Keepers for me, and I know for most for the women that I know that were featured in it, was a real miracle because suddenly we were out of the shadows. Suddenly we were believed. Suddenly we had this huge outpouring of love and empathy for us, which had gone, it's almost been 50 years since I first met him in that room. And so I thank all of you for being here tonight to be here for me for this first time that I'm speaking about it. Thank you very much.